and welcome to Super Connected Conversations again. For this episode, I have invited previous guest, a dear friend, become an ally in our sort of exploration of the technology versus humanity debate. Nick Caldry, you might remember, wrote a fantastic book called The Costs of Connection with his co-author Ulysses A. Mejías. Nick has a new book. It's here. I've got it. It's called Data Grab. This explores the same themes as The Cost of Connection, but I would say much more accessible and impossible to put this one down. The other one was inspired me a lot and answered many of the questions that I've been asking through the songs on Super Connected about big tech and how they affect our day-to-day lives. But Data Grab is much more direct, and I really recommend getting it if you're interested in these issues, which if you're watching this visual podcast, then you probably are. Anyway, I really wanted to talk to Nick again about the new book, about his next book. He's got another book coming out at the end of the year as well, but specifically in context of the smartphone free childhood movement and Jonathan Haidt's Free the Anxious Generation movement. I mean, this is stuff that I could only have dreamt about when I started writing Super Connected. And now it feels like the people are gathering. Welcome, Nick, once again to Super Connected Conversations. How are you?
I'm great and pleased to be reconnected with you in a healthy way.
it's a real delight to see you again and to talk about your next book. But I think just because there'll be some people that might not know about the book that brought us together,
the costs of connection,
which I want to talk to you, and I want to hear more about what your studies in this area have been, and because of this now elevated, amplified movement, which is the smartphone free childhood movement, those concerns and many parents, teachers, anybody really that cares about childhood, that sacred time and the way that we develop now in a digital world. So it's really for that benefit. So, and of course, your books affect, the subjects in your books affect everybody of all ages. Whatever you can add in describing your studies that can be of help to parents, I think it's going to be a really great resource. Tell us a little bit about The Cost of Connection.
So this is a book that I wrote with Ulysses Mejías, who's a Mexican US writer, and basically what we talk about in the book is what we call data colonialism, which I'm sure is an unfamiliar term to most people. But the core of it is this, that, and we'll come back to children because they're particular targets in a minute. But the idea is that we're living in a world now where it's not just the land and all the resources in the land and the bodies of workers in factories that are being taken and exploited, but it's actually our own lives. This simply wasn't possible until 30 years ago when we started all holding a connected computer in our hands, but that suddenly became possible. Complete change in history when, because we use computers, because all computers are connected, because we use them all the time and we integrate them in our lives and we actually picture the most intimate aspects of our lives on these same computers, that means that asset, our lives, can be exploited. Now, we're not the first people to say that. A writer, Shoshana Zuboff, said that in her quite well-known surveillance capitalism theory. But we tried to go a bit beyond that, because surveillance capitalism argues that the problem is a few rogue platforms. And if we can just sort them out, everything's will be fine. But our argument is that that sadly is not true. That what's actually going on right across the economy, right across business everywhere today, is that all businesses now are excited by exploiting the data that we generate by living or working or doing anything, really. That's the big picture. And when you think about how big that change is, you realize that this is even bigger than capitalism itself. The biggest, clearest parallel is to what happened about 500 years ago when two colonial powers, as they became Spain and Portugal, suddenly realized the whole world was there for exploitation. They discovered the Americas, which they didn't know existed, and they realized no one else was going to take it, and they could. And they did take it. They took all the gold and silver, and that money transformed the world economy and led to the beginnings of capitalism a few decades later. And we think we're in this bigger transformation right now, that there's a new stage of colonialism, which is grabbing human life. Now, social media is where that really hits our daily life most directly, because the business models of social media are literally based around exploiting every bit of juice in our life, every bit of engagement, emotion, connection. That's the basis of the business model. And it's a shocking thing to say. We're obviously not the first to point this out. But what we're saying is this is part of a much bigger picture. So we all need to start resisting this. But I think it's important that one of the first places where people have seen the desperate injustice of this is in relation to children's lives, because they have absolutely no choice about this. They don't have any opportunity to consent or not. This is the world that they're growing up in, that all their peers are expecting them to be part of. So it's really vital that we protect them, first of all, as part of this wider fight back against big tech and the impact it's having on our lives.
That's a really great way to begin this. I mean, as you know, I kind of entered into the study of what's happening with social media, musically, and that was to do predominantly with mental health. You know, it's based on a true story of the my friend in Italy who had a young a client. A teenager who never went to school anymore and stayed in her room, working and just doing everything online and wouldn't speak to her parents. And that's sort of what the whole Super Connected album, then film, and now podcast, it sprung out of. And it was looking at mental health in teenagers. I hadn't even begun to imagine that anybody younger than 15 or 16 would be using social media at that point, and I only started realizing that as I spoke to more people like yourself, academics, therapists, and those, you know, really working closely with young kids. And colonialism is a big, scary word, I think, for parents who've just been bringing up their kids and thinking that they're, you know, that they're safe. And then we're using the word data colonialism, not just about teenagers and adults now, but you know, minors. And so how maybe you could explain, I explained it in a simple way, which I know you understand, which was the Jaron Lanier description, which was you give your information for nothing into the cloud, the people that own the cloud regurgitate it back to you at a price, basically, which is what my lyric was, you know, you can give yourself for free, so you can, I give myself for free so that you can sell it back to me. And it's like the greatest scam in the world, isn't it? That to me is something that happens to adults for sure all the time. And maybe teenagers as well. How does that, I haven't even begun to sort of think about it for younger kids. What does that
Well,
mean?
let's start with the basic thing that's going on. We call it the data grab. And I've got behind me a copy of this new book.
Your new book, Data Grab, is the reason we got back in touch.
That's right. This book I wrote with Ulysses, he's a Mexican, so he speaks with a bit more authority about colonialism than me, a white English, old white English guy. Is written for the general reader because we think these issues are so important that they're too important just to be lost in academic debate. We really want people to read this book. The core idea We know that our kids are locked into social media, but let me give you an example of other people who are locked and being surveilled and having everything they do extracted and sweated, as it were, as an asset. It's people who work on the shop floor, who work on the warehouses of Amazon, who work almost in any lower paid job today, cleaning, servicing buildings, will be tracked almost moment to moment. Wherever they move, whatever they do, is being tracked by machines. Amazon makes, that's how it makes its profit in its warehouses. The elites in Amazon are not subject to the moment-to-moment tracking. They wander around their executive suites and they're pretty free to do whatever they do. You can be sure of that. But people who are in lower jobs are being tracked right across the world now. So are Uber drivers. So is anyone who works on a digital platform or the gig economy. They're tracked every moment of every day. That's not so different to what's happening to children, that everything they do on social media, socially, is being tracked. And if they're at a school that's building in the new ed tech platforms, which make your assignments online, which track the way you behave in the classroom online, analyze it through artificial intelligence, they're being tracked in the school as well. So you start to see a bigger pattern here. This idea that corporations can take the world and just use it as a data input isn't just going on with social media, although that may be where it hurts us most. And I'll come back to why it hurts us. But there's a bigger pattern, and it's this data grab that is the big pattern. And that's why we call it the next stage of colonialism. And we mean that in a hopeful way, because if we thought this was just about capitalism, no one really knows what comes after capitalism. There's no clear answer to that. How do we solve the problem of capitalism? We're all part of it. We're all stuck within it. But colonialism, we all now know there was a lot of injustice associated with colonialism, and it's still around in the racism of attitudes today. But we know colonialism was unjust. It was grabbing the resources of the world for a small elite just in Spain, Portugal, Holland, and then, of course, Britain. So I think the colonial framing helps us realize this is unjust too. This is fundamentally wrong. The idea of taking our lives as an input to someone's business model is just a wrong thing for human beings to do to each other. And that brings us to children, because, and there's a special case really with what's happening with children and social media. Children, as I said, have no chance of consenting to this. It is the world that they're born into. They're trying to become social beings in this world. They don't have a choice about that any more than you and I did when we were growing up. We were thrown in to the world we were in, and we had to do our best in it. But there's one other thing that's particularly pernicious about social media. And I think this is what people who have, want to ban the smartphone are getting at, which is that social media platforms are there specifically to exploit and make money out of our best selves, when we're social together, when we connect together, our joys in just being connected with a family, with friends. This is the best part of our life, or potentially. And that's, of course, also what makes it the most valuable part of this business model, because that's where we get engaged most. That's where we're most likely to like something, send it to someone else. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question on that? Just my curiosity. Is that why, whenever, just from my own experience, whenever I share pictures on any social media, and I have times where I've just cancelled it for a while, but of family, certainly my mum, my partner, the engagement is through the roof. Anything to do with my living and surviving, not so much.
That's because social media inevitably goes to the lowest common denominator, and it's designed that way. Right. Actually designed that way, because social media engineers, they don't actually care about social life particularly. They just see it as an asset to be exploited. And the way to exploit it is to generate as many hits, as much what they call engagement, which is us doing stuff that they define as showing we're connected. Because when they show we're connected, they can tell an advertiser, well, this is more valuable, and therefore it's worth you advertising to these guys or to our platform. to do
So,
that. Yeah.
yeah, there's so an image of community that's
Yeah.
framed on social on oh,
Sorry.
sorry, an image that's framed of community on social media is massively valuable
It's
to
massively valuable
advertisers.
and it's completely artificial because it's natural for us to connect. Of course, we love connecting, and in good ways, we've been able to connect in new ways through social media. We're not saying for a moment that's bad. But the thing is, what's bad is to make it into an asset that can be exploited.
And do you think that's why the addictive features embedded in these services, which the people that invented them have since admitted with some shame that they made them the platforms addictive, is that why to keep people on them?
Yeah, that's exactly why. And the classic example is TikTok. I mean, TikTok has got an even smarter business model than Facebook invented. Facebook had the idea that if they could work out how we connected, they could exploit that because advertisers would want to target it with advertising and therefore Facebook would get money. So they started complicated ways of tracking how we're. What's evidence of us being engaged? We have to like things. We have to tag people in pictures, all these sort of things, which show them what they call our social graph. TikTok realized that you don't even need that. That if they lock you into like an attention tunnel and they keep sending you videos and they keep make them as attractive as possible, and they measure exactly how long you look at them and what you look at next. They can actually predict your taste with incredible accuracy. They don't even need to know who you're particularly connected with. They just need to see what you want to watch next.
So that's a much more individually
More
targeted.
individualized. So it doesn't feel like community, except, of course, many TikTok activists, people who make videos on TikTok, they have thousands of viewers because it's all pushed by the algorithm and they can make money in other ways. But all these are different ways of making money out of the good aspect of human life is that we like each other and want to pay attention to each other. But of
And
course,
I suppose that all everything that you're saying, I think for adults is not dissimilar to many of the things that we have to deal with in our lives. But this sounds so sophisticated to be on the other side of a child's experience.
well, it's true.
Isn't it?
I think it's just wrong to exploit children's lives in this way, period. This is not like selling them a toy, which they may throw in the bin or they may come to love, but the parents will be involved in choosing it. Kids may persuade them to buy the toy, but in the end, it's just a toy. It's not surveilling them, it's not recording their life. It can't give a story to their friends in 10 years' time of what they were like. It can't do any of that. It's just a physical toy that just is what it is. Social media is completely different. It's a whole world. And that's the other thing I just want to bring out, that the very special thing that's pernicious about social media, and I use social media like the rest of us, we're all part of this. The thing that was a complete mistake that's unique to social media and maybe different from exploiting workers in factories, which is a different thing for here, is the very idea that we would give to businesses the power to design how we live together. If you'd asked people 30 years ago and said, well, look, things are a bit messed up. Let's just ask some very smart businesses to design how all 8 billion of us in the planet connect up with each other. Let's just leave it to them and see what they come up with. But of course, allow them to make as much money as possible out of that because they're businesses. Businesses do. Then, if you allow them, you don't regulate them, you allow them to have whatever business they want to ensure that what they need, which is engagement, it reaches its maximum level. And you also make sure that because they want maximum levels, they can connect up anyone in the world to anyone else, including the 1% of people, or maybe it's 0.1% of people who are absolutely evil. Guaranteed to be absolutely evil. Let them be connected too, because there's still money that can be made out of that. And also, why not
It's
incentivize people?
unscrescrupulous
Yeah,
sort
why not
of targeting at the moment.
incentivize people to do bad things as well? Because actually, when they do bad things, it's much more engaging. than when they're just nice to each other. Let them attack each other. Let them be violent to each other. Let them get polarized from each other, because that will generate more engagement overall, so more money will be made. If I'd said that to you 30 years ago, you would have said I was some evil genius plotting the end of the world. Well, sadly, what I've just described is what's happened.
Yeah, that's what Yanis Varoufakis calls data capitalism.
Well, he calls it feudalism, which I think
feudalism,
it sounds
right?
a bit comforting. It sounds like we've gone back 500 years, whereas I think we've actually gone forward in a very fast way, 20, 30 years. In 30 years, we've accelerated social history in a dangerous way, and we really need to start interrupting this. I think TikTok's the most alarming one. In that that's only been going 3 or 4 years, really. And that's grown the fastest of all, because it's purely based around algorithms, what people are watching, and the most sophisticated tracking of what they're watching. But if you think why Walmart took a bit longer, when you go into a supermarket, at least when you used to go into a supermarket, you could pay by cash. You could go in and buy 1,000 apples for some reason, go out again. And who was that guy who bought 1,000 apples? We need to get him back, so he's going to buy more apples. But they wouldn't be able to do it because you paid in cash and you walked out. So they had to work out ways to track you in the supermarket. This took a while. They need loyalty cards, et cetera, et cetera. And they gradually built that up and they succeeded. Now, social media already have you trapped when you're on the platform. If you're on the platform, you have to play by the rules of the platform. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And everything you do on that platform, by definition, is recorded.
So would I be, it's fascinating hearing you talk about that. Would I be right or half right? And, you know, I'm just not an expert. I'm surrounded by all of it because I've been writing songs about it. But would I be right in thinking then that if you are a company that's, you know, sole purpose is to make profit from adults spending lots of money on whatever it is they're buying and having those adults trapped, that if you treat young people and children with the same kind of disdain from an early age, then those children will grow into adults who are just accepting of the situation.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because we're talking about not just getting us to buy things or getting us to give a bit of attention here and now, like an advertiser does with an advert in a big popular TV program. We normally walk out and make a cup of coffee in the break or have a beer. We don't, and it doesn't really work very well. They can't trap us because we're sitting at home watching TV, right? We could go out of the room just at the key moment. But on a platform, you can't do that because you have to be playing by the rules of the platform as you are on the platform. That's the basis. We call them in our book data territories. They're not literally physical territories. Of course, it's still us on a computer device. But when you pick up your smartphone and click on it or press on an app, go into TikTok, go into Instagram or WhatsApp or whatever, you have to play the rules of that app. And the basic rule of every single one of them is that everything you do there is recorded. Mm. And the person who records it isn't you, it's the platform. So it's a territory, it's like a territory from which data can be extracted. So that's why we call it a data territory. And of course, what was at the heart of colonialism, territories, taking land, taking territory. That's what they've done to us. They've taken our lives, our attention, as their territory. And that's why we need to think about what it would be to fight back.
And these issues are, you know, mean a lot to all of us who are grown up. But for parents looking at kids, quite often they're seeing lack of concentration, depression, anxiety, an endless list of upsetting conditions and behaviors that no one will ever want to see in their child.
No.
And it's not obviously all down to social media and all down to smartphones, but smartphones and social media addiction are are a thing now. Where's the connection between those companies? I'm really, you know, between the companies and the child at the other end of the screen, which I've shown satirically, as you know, in the film, without really knowing where the connection is. But I did think, and I have thought through the entire writing process of Super Connected, is that all of us are on one side of the screen,
yeah,
and there's something on the other side, a bit like the wizard behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz, that's doing something that's not in our best interest. But as an optimist, I also think it's not like a bad person. I'm not a conspiracy
yeah.
theorist that thinks there's like I think it's the system. I think the system is running it. And so I think two questions is, how do you harness a system? It doesn't have a name. It doesn't have an address. It doesn't have to say, hey, cool down. This is hurting people. And the other question was just, where is the bit that we might be able to just kind of snap between
it's great. Yeah.
One side of the screen and the
Yeah.
other?
I think you're exactly right. The way you put show in your video, where you have the guys in white lab suits who were there testing, looking at the videos. These people really exist. These data engineers really exist. We found that out when Francis Hagen, who was inside Instagram, doing all the clever data stuff inside Instagram, in the end became so disgusted that she had to resign. And she was a whistleblower, and she revealed all sorts of documents of private meetings. They came out in the American papers. She spoke to the British Parliament, the American Congress, to the European Parliament. So the thing she revealed was that Instagram in around about 2018 knew from its own research that young girls in America were being mentally damaged by Instagram. Their levels of anxiety were higher. Their sense of body image was getting worse. They knew all this from their very own research. What did they want to do about it? They decided to go on as they were before, because that was how they would make money. In fact, they even planned to bring in kids under 12 onto the platform, tweenies, to make sure they could be exploited. And they actually said at one point, let's make ourselves the go-to platform, as it were, the social Walmart. But under 12s too. So they doubled down on what they were already doing. They didn't go in the other direction. That's why Frances Haugen walked out of the company. So this is really what it's like. But I think you're right to say conspiracy theory is not the right approach. And I try and avoid that. And if I could just...
I mean, to think of it, I think it's very easy to talk about this kind of subject and without realizing conjure up a kind of a dark figure twiddling his moustache, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's much more complex than that, I think.
It's not like that. Rather than say the system, what I would think we need to attack, the place where we need to cut it, as you said, is the business model. The business model. If whenever we use that word system, we tend to think, well, who can beat the system? We're all beaten by the system. It's impossible. But we can attack the business model. And we can imagine social media run by actual communities, run in villages, towns, for local schools. They're actually moderated by the people who know what those kids are like and care about them and know what the local issues are. We can imagine that. And they exist in some places. The United States have been trying this out in other places. These really exist. And these could be places where people were connected in the way they really want to be.
Local digital networks.
Yeah, local
Social networks that are local. Yeah.
Because there's no doubt the good side of social media is we've learned that there are ways of physically connecting nicely when we're not physically together. And they're a bit quicker than sending a letter in the post, even if the post worked, which it doesn't really much in Britain anymore. Clearly, we don't want to lose the good side of that. But what we got to identify as the problem is the business model that says, hang on, people really want to connect. Let's make that a source of profit. Let's actually not just make a profit here and there because we won't make enough money. Let's connect everyone up to everyone else so that we get the massive whirlpool of information and emotion, and let's target the bad emotions because they're more profitable and allow it to swirl around. That's literally an insane thing for human beings to have done, but it is what we've done. And of course, it's kids above all, and particularly young girls, who suffer most because they feel those social pressures to be in the whirlpool even more than adults do. Although, let's face it, adults also suffer, and there's a lot of suffering for adults too on social media. If we could identify the business models that see the world as there to be exploited and instead have communities who don't want to make money out of their own kids, they just want them to be happy and connected and supported and to be able to speak freely when they want to as well. Why would you want to make money out of that? Why would any community want to exploit itself? It doesn't make any sense. Data colonialism is going on generally. It's part of how capitalism is working. It's literally seizing everything. And that is such a big land grab that we call it the data grab. And its biggest parallel is the grab of colonial assets 500 years ago. But social media is a particular form of that, because there's a very particular thing that went wrong. And as you say, it's not a conspiracy. It's just really bad decisions being made, and we've just done nothing about them and allowed them to get badder and worse and worse and worse. And the decision was to allow businesses to treat our social life in its most joyous form, our connections with family, friends, as an asset. They're taking many things as an asset on the factory floor. Everywhere is being taken as data asset these days, but particularly pernicious is what happened with social media. And if I'd said to you that 30 years ago, let's allow business to recreate how we are together as human beings, our best moments, that when we're really excited together, let them take that over and curate the spaces where that happens and connect us all up. All 7 or 8 billion of us on the planet, because that way you can make more money, potentially more connections emerging out of those 8 billion people. And then allow them to incentivize us to put our really bad stuff in there, because it's often the bad stuff that engages us more than the good stuff. We get more angry, react more, so we send it on more. Look at this terrible stuff. That makes money. And of course, we don't exclude the people who are really bad, who are out there somewhere on the planet, the 0.1% of people who are truly evil. Let them be part of social media too, because the engagement they cause can create even more profit. Let this all happen and invent a business model to exploit this opportunity so as much money is made as possible. People, if you'd said that to people 30 years ago, is this okay? They would have said, no way is this okay. This is absolutely insane. This is a nightmare scenario. But this, I've just redescribed the birth of social media, how it actually happened. Not through a conspiracy, but a whole series of terrible decisions that we have done nothing about until maybe now. And so this is what I'll be talking about in a solo book that's coming out in October, called The Space of the World. By this, what is this world we created? The space of the world, can human solidarity survive social media? And what if it can't? And there I'm asking exactly the question that the people who are thinking about banning smartphones are asking. Can we go on like this? Could it ever have been right to do what we've allowed to happen? And if it's definitely not right, we have to get together and do something about it. Personally, I'm not sure banning smartphones quite will work, because smartphones are pretty useful things, and you need to know whether the bus is coming on time, and maybe an app on your smartphone will help you know whether it's coming. But it's the apps on the smartphone that represent social media that we have to look at, because of these pernicious business models that we're all, especially children, are being damaged by.
The way you're describing social media and what we might be able to do to challenge the way it's taken over our lives, it sounds similar to some of the other more simpler political concerns that people have, that it's about trying to create local networks and the unifying ingredient here that's making things really difficult is this global side of it. Because I mean, I feel that with little things, with, I mean, just like anything that I've got a problem with, where it's, I don't know, my eyes or the doctors or something, you know, getting to the person locally to say, I need help with this, or I need some assistance, or can I get, it's really hard just going to someone about anything these days. And certainly forget it with Amazon, Facebook, WhatsApp. You're never going to talk to somebody, a human, about the way those platforms are working for you or not working for you or not working for your children. I mean, I'm just sort of riffing with you now because I just, it occurred to me when you said that.
I think you've again hit the nail on the head. I mean, I'm not saying, and Ulysses and I are not saying in the book that's out now, we're not saying that social media in principle are bad, that the idea of connecting with each other a bit more effectively and frequently, sending pictures of a lovely meal we just had, or just being happy at Christmas. No one's saying that's a bad thing. It's just an amplification of the good things in life. The question is the platform that we do that on. And if it's run by a business model that doesn't make any much difference between a good thing and a bad thing, and in fact probably makes more money about bad things, then the price we're going to pay for getting those good things is extremely high. And that's what's happening to kids today, that their joy when they just celebrate their exam results on WhatsApp, and you know, everyone knows it's instant, it's exciting. No one can say that that isn't a wonderful thing. The problem is that that comes with a lot of very bad things as well. And you can't separate the two on that business model. The idea that connection is bad is crazy. Clearly, it's a good thing. What's bad is trusting big business that operates, wants to operate on a global scale and doesn't know the rift difference between right and wrong, good and bad, to run our connection. That's insanity. And that's what we've done. So we need to think really seriously about how we could have social media platforms that were closer to home. For a school, let's say, or a village, or part of a town where people know each other broadly and they want to connect. And they also trust someone in that community to know what's bad, what's local, that really needs to be managed. People do this all the time in actual social life. So why couldn't you do that online? You could. Wouldn't necessarily be easy. People have to spend time doing it, but it can be done and it is being done in certain parts of the world. What's crazy is the large scale business model. So I think we have to be really practical here as well as have the bigger ideas. We need ideas to help motivate us that there is another world possible. We can imagine how we could change this once we identify the problem. But what can we do practically? I'm personally a bit skeptical about banning mobile phones, because mobile phones, that sorry, smartphones, mobile phones are fine if they're basic, but smartphones are extremely useful. And they're very useful for kids who are out there trying to find out whether the bus is going to come, need to contact their parents, maybe check some detail about where they're going to meet someone. We want them to have maps. We want them to know where they're going. For that, they need a smartphone with an internet connection. So I'm skeptical about banning smartphones, but I'm really not skeptical with what I think is the heart of what Jonathan Haidt is saying, which is to ban the social media apps that are the core of a lot of the smartphone traffic. I don't think you can ban them by saying anyone under a certain age mustn't use them. All these social media platforms have official age limits, and none of them work. So TikTok has an official age limit of 13. But the UK regulator Ofcom, whose evidence and research I trust because they put a lot of effort into getting things right, found that kids under five were using TikTok in the UK. Under five. Let's just remind ourselves what TikTok is. It's basically an addictive attention tunnel driven by algorithms to ensure that whatever you are, whatever you look at, whatever age you are, the longer you look at it, the more you're going to get of it. It's obviously you're interested if you're looking at it, whether it's a naked body, something abusive, something beautiful, perhaps, the longer you look at it, the more you will get of it. It is an addiction tunnel based around the most powerful AI. That's what TikTok is. Interestingly, in China, they've got a different approach. I'm no admirer of China's surveillance society. But one thing we need to recognize is that the government in China actually sees a danger for Chinese society. And it's reined in the parent company of TikTok, it's a Chinese equivalent, which is called Douyin, and insisted that they link more to actual educational values. So that's one way of dealing with this, but you need an extremely powerful authoritarian government. The simpler way is to actually ban these platforms altogether, or say you should not run with this business model unless you're tuned into community values, unless you don't make money out of people's connection, you shouldn't exist. And that's what I think we need to do. And that's what I'm writing about in the next book, dismantling the bad social media, talking about how we build good social media that are actually good for kids and good for everyone in every stage of their life. That's what we need to do. And that's the big task right now. And it will be local to closer to local communities. And I think that's where we're starting to head right now. We have to build and stick together. None of us as an individual has any hope of changing anything because our habits are what they are, and our friends rely on us to keep going with our habits. The only way we can do this is to help each other and say, you know what? We're actually going to change together. We're going to become less dependent on these platforms. None of us are going to allow our kids to be on these social media. We're all going to agree this is bad. And we're going to start changing things from today. And we're going to vote ourselves out of this attention economy and into a better society that is free of these terrible toxic ills.
That's such a beautiful way to conclude this. I mean, yeah, I'm so grateful that people like you are, this is going to be your third book at the end of the year. In the time that we've know or I've known about your work since 2017, 2018. So, and remind us of the time. So we've got The Cost of Connection,
And
which
also
is just a
connection.
huge influence on me.
Thank you.
Data Grab, which has just
Data
come
Grab's
out.
the new one. This is the one that you can buy in the shops now. It's a Penguin book. You can
Yeah.
get it in Smith's Waterhouse. Data Grab, the new colonialism of big tech and how to fight back. And one way to fight back is to challenge social media platforms, for sure. And then, because I thought it was so important, I've written a separate solo book, which is coming out in October, called The Space of the World. Can human solidarity survive social
Yeah, I
media?
can't wait to
And
read
what if
that.
it can't? And the
Yeah.
answer, and this is what clues into the people you're linking to in these banned smartphone movements, the answer must be we do something about it. We actually start resisting and say no more. We actually start helping each other to become less dependent and demand that the regulation of these bad business models and the insistence on better ones and the rebuilding of social media closer to our communities. And the good news is these platforms already exist. They're
Yeah,
called
it's happening.
federated social media that are actually run not for profit, not to make money out of your attention, by small groups of people. Of course, they're a bit less convenient than Facebook these days. We're not used to them. They're technically a bit complicated. The more people buy into them, see, they will get to
Well,
use.
you've used the magic word though, convenience. I mean, if it's convenient for you, then it's probably profitable for someone else, isn't it?
That's
Something.
true, and that's why we have to stop that type of
Yeah,
exploitation.
don't get me started on music streaming.
No, I know. And yeah, that's a separate topic. But the key is, why should someone make money out of the basic aspects of our life? Like, for example, anyone could invent an app tomorrow and say, look, you and your family, you want to be more connected. We can make money out of that, but we know you want to be more connected. So just go on being more connected and we'll make it as convenient as possible. And we'll make money out of that. But we're already connected with our family and our friends. We don't need to be told how to be connected. Everything that Facebook says is just hot air. The idea that they're helping us be more connected is just nonsense.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest sort of rewrites of the human script I've ever heard.
Exactly. And
you know, we're connecting people. It's not, you're not. You're identifying that everyone is connected, and then you're turning it into a business.
But can I just make a final link to the colonialism here, which is what into this might tempt people to try out this data grab book. I know the word colonialism seems a big stretch. It's a heavy, very political word, and it links with a lot of other terrible things like the violence of colonialism, which is not what we're talking about, and the racism, which may be there, but it's not what we're talking about right now. The key point is that we know that if we were to stick together, we could actually say no to this. This was what the early colonized people said. They were living a perfectly good life in the Americas until the Spanish and Portuguese turned up and tricked them into giving some gold and silver over. And then if they didn't, they murdered them. They were living a good life, very sophisticated civilizations. It wasn't a life that needed to be saved by the colonizers any more than our life needed to be saved by Facebook 20 years ago. It didn't need to be saved. What needed to happen was a story that said, hang on, that life you're leading could be a lot better, more connected, if you just went over to our product and we redefined your community as part of the new Americas, which is Facebook's world. That's in effect what's happened. This trick, this duping to say what you're already doing actually could be part of our world. Go on doing it, but we'll be making money all the meantime. The sheer injustice of that, the craziness of that, only really comes out when you see it in a colonial frame. That is what happened in colonialism. People were duped into it. We've been duped. We need to take off the scales of our eyes and realize we don't have to go on being part of this if we help each other, if we deconstruct this colonial land grab, this data grab, and think, let's start over and rebuild social media in a much better way that's closer to us. We obviously need to reconnect with each other face to face. That's definitely important. Maybe using our smartphones less will help with that. But as I said, I'm not in favor of banning smartphones, including.
I think banning is a crazy notion for most things. But I think regulation, especially with children, is so important to even be able to discuss, especially when you can see photographs quite easily of Mark Zuckerberg out on a green plane with his children. He's not on computers all day long. He's not on smartphones all day long.
And it's well known that social media executives have known this for a long time. They won't let their kids near this stuff.
No, they send their children to the same school that I finished my education in, Rudolf Steiner School.
That's right. Any more than the colonizers sent their kids out to work in the plantations. They didn't do that.
Yes,
they stayed at home enjoying the profits.
So and really enjoying the life that is a right of everybody's to enjoy things.
It is a right, and we've got to take it back, and we've got to help each other with the inconvenience, the difficulty of that. If you've got young kids, you need to organize a birthday party. Facebook is a very convenient way to do it. Let's face it. But we have the technology. We know how that could be built without linking up all 8 billion of people on the planet at the same time on the same platform. We don't need to do that to have organize children's birthday parties in your own town and village. We need to change the scale we think about, and we need to get our social values at the heart of this and the safety of our kids. And that's what's starting now to happen. People realize we can't go on like this. That's the start of change. And I really hope your tour is going to be part of sending the message, and happy to meet people who are interested in this very more. We need to get together and start helping each other solve this problem.
Yeah, which is why we're taking your book with us on the tour.
Thank you very much. It's very
along with several authors who I think are really showing a way to make the change that you're talking about. Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For your time and your brilliant work.
Thank you very much, and I really look forward to catching up with you on the tour and hearing one of the gigs. And
we'll see you after the shows. Yeah, definitely.
Don't you want to sing la 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 alone? see.